It's Thursday, January 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Coming up on our program today, terrorist groups combine in a string of attacks against Pakistan. There are tensions between Iran and the United States, but some big ones may have been averted. The South China Sea is the topic of the latest hashtag VOA program. We'll take a look at that. And also ahead, food for the homeless. That's all coming up on today's International Edition. Pakistani police and hospital officials said a suicide bombing Wednesday at a polio vaccination center in southwestern Pakistan killed at least 14 people. It also wounded 23 others. Doctors said five of the wounded were listed as critical and that death toll could be rising. The attack occurred in the city of Quetta, that's the capital of violence-plagued Balochistan province, and authorities there say that most of the casualties were security personnel. Pakistan's consulate in Afghanistan also suffered an attack, as did the offices of the Pakistani broadcaster ARY News in Islamabad. Islamic State has claimed responsibility alongside Pakistan's outlawed Tariq-e-Taliban. And the combination of these groups exponentially raises the threat of terrorism in the area. VOA Urdu language reporter Mohammed Atif joins us now to explain more. And every so often, we do encounter some technical difficulties. Unfortunately, we have one right now. We hope to bring that to you a short time from now. We turn to our social media segment now to find out what is trending on the World Wide Web and what everybody is tweeting out there and posting on Facebook. To do that, International Edition's social media correspondent G. Abby Lee is right here in Studio 22 to tell us what's buzzing online. Hello, G.
Hi, Jim. The global economic outlook isn't looking great. We knew about that for a while, and today's story is just another argument for selling your stocks. In a client note, economists with the Royal Bank of Scotland told investors to sell everything. They warned the situation is similar to the global financial crisis that began in 2008.
Well, that's quite a scary thought. Mm-hmm. When we think back to that financial crisis, that was a huge blow to many investors throughout the United
Absolutely.
States and the world. So when it was written, what was the key point?
The note is dated January 8th and basically telling the investors to sell everything except high-quality bonds. It argued clients should be concentrating on return of capital rather than return on capital. Yikes.
Ooh, that is scary. Well, what are some of the other takeaways that you found in researching this on social media?
It's particularly bearish on China and global commodities and predicts oil prices to fall to as low as $16 a barrel. It also expects unemployment rate to skyrocket in developed countries on the back of increase in automation.
Well, I see. What is the public's reaction like on social media for this?
For that, I went on to the Wall Street Journal's Facebook page. It posted a link to the article, and here's a comment with the most number of likes. RBS has probably shorted the market. The harder the market falls, the more profit RBS would make. Self-fulfilling prophecy. And why would anyone share their strategy with other investors for free? Isn't the market a zero-sum game? So you can tell that people are not taking the advice at its face value. Another reply reflects the rampant frustration with financial markets, financial institutions in the West. It reads like this. Governments should look into criminalizing the banking cartels, or are governments in their pockets?
Well, a lot of rhetorical questions being bounced around out there in cyberspace on the social media platforms.
Absolutely. I'm glad you noticed that. The RBS is on Twitter at RBS Group, but has yet to tweet about the leaked client note. Now, before I go, I want to say that another story trending on the web is singer Patti LaBelle and her new boyfriend. The 71-year-old found a new love, a drummer who is 30 years junior. It's not really common for women to date somebody that much younger, but it is pretty common for, you know, male actors or mm-hmm. singers to date someone that much younger, right? So All I can say is, well, good on you, Patty.
Well, if she found a drummer, then I guess he can keep the beat.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Well, back to you, Jim.
Yes, they sometimes describe that as a cougar, but I don't think we'll go that far. Congratulations to Patty LaBelle. However you find happiness in life, it's a good thing. And we thank you for that great wrap-up, G, on social media. You can follow her on Twitter, her handle, at G Abby Lee, and on our program's account, at VOA _IE. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's at voanews.com.
voanews.com.
Online news for a changing world.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Iranian officials say they have released 10 U.S. Navy personnel who were detained Tuesday on Farsi Island in the Persian Gulf after their vessels had drifted into Iranian territorial waters. An Iranian military official with the Revolutionary Guard said an investigation found the personnel, 9 men and 1 woman, had entered the waters due to mechanical problems, and the trespassing was not hostile or for the purposes of spying. Former diplomat James Jeffrey, who is now with the Washington Institute for Near East Policy, told VOA's Victor Beatty that the investigation will determine whether this was a case of innocent passage.
We need to know exactly what their track was. Most importantly, were they in or had they entered and left Iranian waters, or were they in Iranian waters at any time? The second thing is the track is important because there is a concept of innocent passage, so that just because a foreign military vessel enters your waters doesn't mean that you can seize that vessel and the personnel. Legally, you can make a case, but again, if they are looking like they're doing innocent passage, that is, in some cases, you do innocent passage because it's the only way from point A to point B. And other times, you know, you might have navigational problems. But the two questions are, does it look like you're not sailing towards the territory? And secondly, is there any evidence of hostile activity? Examples of that for a small boat, for bigger boats, there are all kinds of things, launching helicopters and other things. If you had frogmen who were going overboard or looking like they were going overboard, if the crew seemed to be, you know, obviously armed with long weapons and machine guns and such, and so you might think that this is a mini invasion, or you wanting to land commandos or something, those all would have generated a rational self-defense mission that would have authorized, under international law and logic, seizing and investigating. And then if they could explain why they were basically innocent and were going from point A to point B, and here's the engine that's conked out, you'd let them go.
According to senior administration officials, both craft were en route from Kuwait to Bahrain.
There's certainly U.S. facilities in Kuwait and a big base in Bahrain. There's the 5th Fleet headquarters in Bahrain.
This comes at a sensitive time in relations, as so-called implementation day, when sanctions relief comes to Iran, is supposed to take place.
Well, it takes place only after the IAEA reports that Iran has carried out all of its initial responsibilities involving the shipment of 98% of the enriched uranium out, which is in the process, the closing of the Iraq plutonium reactor, which are the decommissioning of, which I understand is being held up. There's a problem. And the decommissioning of the large percent of the centrifuges. And until the IAEA makes that determination, there won't be a implementation day.
Well, those boats were moving between Kuwait and Bahrain when contact with them was lost. The two countries do not have diplomatic relations. However, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, who came to know Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif during the nuclear talks, spoke with him by phone about the incident. Now, 2 weeks ago, U.S. officials blamed patrol boats with the Iranian Revolutionary Guard for firing rockets in the vicinity of the USS Harry S. Truman carrier strike group, which was passing through the Strait of Hormuz at the time. They called it a dangerous and unprofessional stunt. Vietnam and the Philippines have been sharpening their criticism of China's first landings of civilian planes in the disputed Spratly Islands of the South China Sea. The Vietnamese government accused China on Wednesday of threatening aviation safety in the region by not providing sufficient notice about the test flights earlier this month. Philippine officials also accused Beijing of heightening regional tensions, but Beijing rejected all those protests, claiming that it is construction of an artificial island and runway on the reef is part of their internal Chinese matters. China's growing assertiveness in the region was the topic of this week's hashtag VOA TV show. Host Michael Lippin is right here in Studio 22. Hello, Michael.
Hey, Jim.
What did the panel have to say about China's recent actions on the reef?
Well, Jim, this week we had two panelists on the show. One was Teresa Fallon. She's a China observer at the European Institute for Asian Studies in Brussels, Belgium, and she joined us via Skype. We also had Curtis Chin, a former U.S. ambassador to the Asian Development Bank and a current analyst at the Milken Institute, and he was in our studio. So I spoke to them about how China has been promoting those plane landings that you were just mentioning through social media. In particular, I mentioned how Chinese state media posted photos on Twitter of female Chinese flight attendants who had been on the test flights posing for pictures and even selfies as they walked around the reef with huge smiles on their faces. Now, I first asked Teresa Fallon whether she thinks China's current economic woes may have something to do with its promotion of those reef landings.
Well, I actually tried to find out which part of the newspaper these photos appeared on. So they were front page news in China. So when you have these stock vibrations, a very serious issue happening in China, they had to shut down the exchanges. There's a lot of tensions, high volatility. What did the people hear about in the newspaper or read about? The first thing they saw were these very attractive
flight attendants
landing on this island. So that makes the Chinese feel positive. They're building these islands. They're promoting their sovereignty or what they perceive as their own sovereignty. They're changing, building like Great Wall of Sand in the sea. So they're promoting what they feel is a nationalistic feeling and gaining support from the people. So even if the economy might be having some jitters right now, the stock market is very volatile, they can be proud in the fact that the Chinese Communist Party is guaranteeing their sovereignty.
Well, Curtis Chin, how strong a connection do you see between this nationalistic messaging coming out of China and the slowing economy that they're having to deal with?
I believe they're very much linked. You know, at a time when the government isn't providing the pace of growth as it once did, how do you unite your people? How do you unite your country? And one way is to show that you're standing up to your view, their enemy, the bad guys. And so very clearly, when we see a difficult economic time in any country, leadership will try and unite their people somehow. And in this way, if it's not, you know, in their minds, the evil old Japanese or the Koreans or, you know, the Vietnamese, the country is brought together on some of these broader issues. You know, what is the Communist Party all about? You know, as it's moved, you know, for 50 years, what are they now offering the people when people are hungering also for change, not just economically, but people are also hungering for more freedoms. You know, one of the interesting things that was on social media earlier last year was a photo of the son of one of the richest people in China's son's dogs. And he put on the dog 4 Apple Watches. And clearly that was a little bit excessive. And clearly in China's, you know, race, Chinese government's race against social media, they probably took that down quickly. But what a statement that is about, you know, what have wealthy Chinese people now done in China, they've forgotten what is the role and what is the life of regular people in building Chinese society.
And that was Curtis Chin speaking with me on hashtag VOA. If you'd like to see and hear more, you can find the show on Facebook. Just go to the hashtag VOA Facebook page, Jim.
Okay, it's a great show. I urge you to check it out and watch it. I've seen it. Wonderful program, Michael. And thank you for sending me those photos of the Chinese flight attendants on the island. Yes, I understand that in the local newspapers in China, that despite all of the economic woes and worries about the stock market crashing, readers were treated to the picture of these flight attendants on the front page.
Right, and Teresa Fallon said she even saw them on the front page. And actually, this is something that does inspire a lot of pride in Chinese people, the fact that they were able to build this island out of a reef in the middle of nowhere is quite an achievement. And the Chinese say this is not just for China's own use, but they wanted to help they wanted to help vessels and just any ship that's going through the region to have a place where you can land a plane and provide support for vessels from all nations is something that China says is important, and that's why they built this reef. But of course, other nations see it differently. They may not have gotten such warm feelings from seeing these flight attendants as the Chinese did.
Right. And these reefs, if you're not familiar with the South China Sea, are strategically located between the Philippines and several other nations, which all have competing claims in this very tight area.
They do. And actually, the Philippines and Vietnam also have been engaged in construction activities on the reefs that they can, the reefs that they control, and China claims those reefs and complains about what they do as well.
Well, we are, as they say, in uncharted waters, and we'll continue to follow the story. Thank you so much, Michael, for joining us.
Thanks, Jim.
You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Yeah, thank you, Mike.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Fine dining is usually reserved for those who can afford the typically costly meals, but in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, some of the top restaurants are donating gourmet meals to a local homeless shelter. International Edition's David Byrd has details.
Sanford Restaurant is considered one of the best upscale eating establishments in the Midwestern United States. Its menu includes such items as char-grilled loin of elk with maple polenta, balsamic grilled romaine, and tart cherry reduction, or lacquered quail and crisp veal sweetbread with grilled peach and braised collards. But now Sanford is one of 8 fine restaurants that provide meals for the city's largest publicly funded homeless shelter, the Guest House. Volunteer Dale Ryan helped start the project in 2011 when he saw what some of the men at the Guest House were eating. He says a good meal is a very practical way to help the men get their lives back together.
Food goes right to the brain. These guys need nutrition to get their lives back and to be able to go out on the street, find work, and get their health back.
Ryan, who used to work in the food industry, approached some of his friends in the restaurant business. He says that he was surprised by their willingness to help.
I would sometimes go home at night and find that I would be crying in the car because I was so overwhelmed because I was not getting any rejections.
The meals the men at the Guest House receive are the same quality that paying customers at Sanford and other restaurants receive. Chef Justin Aprahamian, a winner of the prestigious James Beard Award, says that he and his crew take special care when preparing meals for the Guest House.
We take a lot of pride in what we send over to the Guest House. You know, we're not cutting corners on anything we're making for them. I mean, we're shopping at the same farmers markets and ordering from the same purveyors.
On this particular night, Aprahamian is making a cassoulet.
Cassoulet is kind of a classic French stew where you got a combination of, you know, it would be some duck meat, classically sausage, pork, beans, and you know, a bunch of vegetables kind of all stewed together.
Guest house resident Billy Pollard says the meals he and other residents enjoy are always something special.
Oh, I really enjoyed it. That was really good. I like the way they cook that food. I like the way they prepare it too.
Robert Howard is another guest house resident who is on the verge of leaving the shelter after being off heroin for nearly 2 years.
Yeah, I can tell it's not like a person that's made it from home. It tastes better than that. I don't know that much.
Howard says that even when he is out of the guest house, he will make sure to schedule return visits on the gourmet nights. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
A great story. Thank you so much, David. And you can find that and so much more at our website, voanews.com. That's where our program, International Edition, is. And you can download the show, go back, and hear some other programs if you wish. And, of course, check out all the great news and information on our website. Follow us on Twitter as well, at @VOA_IE. Our director is Tracy Carter, our engineer Dan Crafton, and I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We thank you so much for joining us. Come back and visit. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Since October, five people connected to a publishing house in Hong Kong have mysteriously disappeared. The publishing house, Mighty Current, has published books critical of Chinese Communist Party officials, including Chinese President Xi Jinping. Gui Minhai, the owner of Mighty Current, vanished October 17th from a seaside apartment in Thailand. Later that month, two staff members of Causeway Bay Bookstore, which is partially owned by Mighty Current, went missing during a trip to mainland China. A fourth man connected to the publishing house also disappeared in October, most likely in Hong Kong or Xinjiang. On January 1st, reports surfaced that Li Bo, a business partner of Gui Minhai, had gone to visit a warehouse in Hong Kong used by the publishing company and did not return home. Hong Kong media have reported that security camera footage showed a mysterious man wearing a cap following Li Bo, both when he entered and exited the elevator of the warehouse. An eyewitness reportedly saw several people push Li into a van after he exited the building. Thousands of residents of Hong Kong took to the streets to protest the disappearances. Among other slogans, protesters reportedly shouted, "No to cross-border abductions," and "Stop political kidnapping." Hong Kong's chief executive, Leon Chun-ying, expressed concern over Hong Kong's residents' rights and safety and said it would be unacceptable if mainland Chinese authorities were seeking to enforce laws in Hong Kong. That, he said, would be a breach of the Basic Law, a document that enshrines the principle of one country, two systems, and guarantees Hong Kong a high degree of autonomy and its own legal system. The Basic Law also guarantees freedom of speech in Hong Kong. At a press briefing, U.S. State Department spokesperson John Kirby said the United States is disturbed by reports of the disappearances of five people associated with the Mighty Current Publishing House. "We share the concern of the people of Hong Kong regarding these disappearances," said Mr. Kirby. "We noted the January 4th statement by Hong Kong's chief executive expressing concerns about the potential implications of this case, and we share those concerns."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.